Thank you so much for joining us today here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and we're spending the next hour talking about organ donation, covering the process, working through your questions, hearing your donation stories, and I hope you'll join in as we visit with a trio of guests. Dr. Ty Dunn is Surgical Director of the Kidney and Pancreas Transplant Programs at Frederick Hospital and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Ty Dunn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
With us as well, Deb Ness is a kidney donor. Deb, thank you for joining in.
I'm super excited to be here. Thanks.
Thank you so much. And Jeff Call, a recipient of Deb's kidney donation. Jeff Call, thank you for joining us.
Well, good afternoon, Larry. Nice to hear your voice.
As we talk with these three, I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Have you recently donated an organ, or have you received a transplanted organ from a donor? What was the experience like for you? Is a loved one scheduled for an organ transplant soon, maybe? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Dr. Dunn, let's turn to you first. What kind of need is there for organ donors in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, there's a huge need, honestly. As far as kidney donors in Wisconsin, we have a lot of people on the list nationally, just a little bit less than 90,000. And, you know, here in Wisconsin, there's 556 people today on the kidney transplant list in Wisconsin. So that's a lot of people.
Yeah, it is indeed. Any difference in terms of nationalities?
Well, I think the demographics kind of parallel the population demographics of the different parts of the country. So, you know, in some parts of the country, there's a lot of density in the population, and so there's longer waiting times. For example, in New York and California, people can be waiting up to 8 to 10 years on dialysis for a kidney. And so here in Wisconsin, we are lucky that it's not as much of a waiting time, but it still, for some blood types, can be up to 6 years.
Well, I know from experience that organ and tissue donations occur after the donor has died. In my case, I have a cornea transplant from someone who, a woman who died, and I have some bone marrow from a man who passed away just relating to a tumor that I had in my finger. So that is common, but I want to talk more about the living donations, Dr. Dunn. Which organs can be donated while you're alive?
Yeah, so kidney is the most common by far. There were about 7,000 living kidney donors in the nation last year, helping out their fellow man, which is great. It is possible to give part of your liver, either the right lobe to an adult or the left lobe to a baby. And in very rare cases, not really commonly done anymore, there have been living lung donor transplants.
Boy, that would be a difficult one. I would think.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff and Deb, I want to talk to you before we go to the phones and we hear from Samantha and Blair and Juanita in Annawa. I want to talk to you for just a minute or two. How did you come to know each other? Jeff, maybe you can chime in.
Yeah, well, we actually knew it, started knowing each other when our two daughters were playing soccer, and they both played in the Milwaukee area, and they were about 12 years old, and so I've known Deb and her husband Tim since my daughter was 12, and so that's 20 years. Both Amy, which is Deb's daughter, and my daughter Hannah are 32, roughly about that. So we've known each other for 20 years, and they also played, besides club soccer, then they went to the same college and played at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. So we took a lot of road trips together. So we know each other pretty well.
Oh, man. And Deb, you're the A-Kidney donor here. Tell us more about how you decided to donate your kidney to your longtime friend, Jeff.
Well, as Jeff shared, you know, we've been friends for a long time. We've traveled together quite a bit throughout the whole U.S., going to a lot of soccer tournaments. And I always knew that Jeff had an issue with his kidneys, with a kidney disease that he can speak to a little bit further. And one day we were up in Minocqua and hanging out and, you know, sitting out on the deck. And Jeff mentioned that, you know, Deb, I'm on the transplant list now. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I didn't realize it really was going to come down to that. And we're sitting out there, Jeff and his wife, Katie, and my husband, Tim, and I, and we're just talking. And I looked at Jeff and I said, well, Jeff, you can have my kidney. And my husband looks at me and he's like, Deb, don't you think you need to talk to me about that? And I'm not quite the independent, opinionated woman. And I looked at him, I said, no, I don't need to. So that kind of started the process there. And, you know, my husband and I used to live in Wisconsin, and we moved to Colorado in 2019. And now we live in the Front Range of Denver. So we always go back to Wisconsin every year, and we always spend a bunch of time, a full week with Jeff and Katie and some friends, and we enjoy each other's company. So that kind of started the journey for us at that point.
Oh, man. And Jeff, when did you know that you needed a kidney transplant? Had you not told Deb about that when you first learned of it?
Well, I actually found out that I had polycystic kidneys when I was the age of about 35. My cousin had found out that he had an ultrasound and found out that he had it. And both my mom and her two sisters had polycystic kidneys. So he got an ultrasound and found out he had it. So I, about the age of 35, I had an ultrasound and found out that, yes, I had it also. So it took about, oh, I'd say a good 15 years before I actually had to start changing my diet a little bit. And then, so I didn't really tell a lot of people that I had all that because it didn't really affect me that much. But then the last 5 to 6 years, then I had to change my diet quite a bit. And then I started just telling people that there's asked me why I'm not eating this food or not eating that food. And I had to tell them that that's my new diet now because of this disease. So that's how it kind of went.
Well, just waiting for Jeff, I imagine waiting for a donation was, I don't know, painful in some ways?
Well, you know, I was actually really lucky because I had just got on the transplant list, and Deb was just there that week up in Minocqua that weekend, and we asked about our blood type, and we matched, and things just kind of took off from there. So I didn't really have to, like, I didn't even think about much of a transplant until we started talking, and then the ball started rolling. Deb's very good at getting the ball rolling, and she's very persistent. And yeah, so from there on in, I didn't really have that much issue. I was, you know, just wondering if we matched well enough so that we could actually be a partner, recipient and a donor. But it went pretty quickly.
That is really great. It probably does. I'm sure it doesn't always work that way.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, and Dr. Dunn, you probably have some experience on the length of time that people sometimes wait.
Yeah, it really depends upon their blood type, and most importantly, whether they have a potential living donor volunteer. That's what I would call people like Deb, right? A living donor volunteer. Only about 1 out of 4 people that step forward are actually found to be healthy enough to be able to donate a kidney. So, you know, that's a process. The donors are really highly evaluated to make sure that their health is sufficient, that they have extra kidney function, that they can afford to give away one kidney. We know that people live for a very long time with one kidney, and so it's not really a long-term health issue, but it's making sure that there's not any kind of, you know, hidden cancers or infections that could be transmitted.
Yeah. Deb, go ahead.
So it was a very thorough testing process. And I would say that Frater and the transplant team there did such a good job to help me understand the process, help me understand the need for the testing. And sometimes some of the tests that I had set up, like we had a full day of testing that was scheduled in March of 2023. And I had to meet with the transplant team, the nephrologist, the social worker, a dietitian. And I'm like, why am I meeting with all these people? And they want to make sure that you are healthy enough. They want to make sure that mentally and psychologically you can handle this, and that you're going to be okay with it, and that your family and your loved ones are okay with it. So they had to, you know, get comfortable with all that. And then there was all the testing that had to be done, EKGs and chest x-rays and CT scans and nuclear medicine, GFR studies and stress tests and blood work and urine tests. And it went on and on. And, you know, at the end of the day, I came back, I don't know, two or three times in 2023 for testing at Frater, because I always wanted to be back and do as much of it as I could in at Frater versus being in Colorado. And I know more about my health now than I ever thought I would. And as Dr. Dunn shared, you know, being healthy enough to give away one of your kidneys, because your function goes from 100% of whatever my normal function is to being cut in half. And then over the next 3 or 4 months, my one kidney I have left starts growing and being able to have more output. So the process and working with the folks at Frater was just an absolute wonderful experience for me.
Oh, thank you so much for that comment. I want to give some of our listeners a chance to join in. And Samantha in Blair, thank you for waiting. What's your comment?
Thank you. There was a guy at my church that was on dialysis for, I don't know, about 10 years, and he had no kidney functions. They took out his kidneys. He was just a mess. And then he had gotten a kidney, and after a while that rejected. So then he was at home with his wife, and they got the phone call at midnight to be down in Madison. They had a kidney for him if he wanted it. So they went down there, and he had the transplant. And he said it was from someone that was like an actual live donor that was like 18, 19, 20, somewhere in there. Didn't drink, didn't smoke, no drugs. He said, you know, this is like a brand new car I got in here, because it barely had, you know, he said it barely had a life.
Oh, man, an 18 or 19-year-old. Oh, Dr. Dunn, comment on that?
Yeah, what a blessing for your friend. I have to say, though, if he's getting called at midnight, it's not to set up a living donor surgery. This is probably a person that had some sort of, you know, traumatic brain injury or something that had become brain dead. And so the process is that they go to surgery, like a planned surgery after they're declared brain dead, and then they go through a surgery to procure the organs. And so these are technically deceased donor organs, but obviously a very good quality and really one of the best kidneys you could probably get. So outside of living donors, obviously.
Yeah. And Juanita has something for us that certainly relates to this. Juanita, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for having me. Our daughter, when she was 16 and got her driver's license, chose to be an organ donor. She felt that it was a very important thing to be able to donate your organs. When she was 21, she died in a car accident. And her organs were donated, and various parts have helped multitudes of people. We've received letters when things first happened. They used heart valves, they used bone marrow and bones, skin grafts for grafts. They, when she first passed, over 75 people actually parts of her daughter. 75 people. I think that out of that, 4 people received portions from what they took of her heart. And they also had preserved what they could for skin grafts and bone marrow.
Well, Juanita, I am very sorry for your loss, but if there's anything that can help a loss like that is to know how much your daughter has contributed to the lives of so many people. Thank you so much. Dr. Ty Dunn, maybe a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you on behalf of all of the families and people, like families of people that are waiting for this precious gift. You know, it's donor families are so incredibly special, and I've been lucky enough in my life to meet with many, you know, throughout their journey. And, you know, it's just the, you know, a small chance to make something good come of something that's such a tragedy. And so I think a lot of people think that maybe they're too old to donate their organs after they die, or that they've got problems. And I think people don't really understand the power of tissue donation, which is what I hear so much about from our donor mom. You know, eyes, heart valves, you know, tendons, all sorts of things, in addition to the organs, obviously, that are often very healthy in a younger person. So even older people that may have other problems can still donate tissue and things that are quite meaningful for people. So thank you very much for sharing your story.
Juanita, thank you so much. Appreciate your call very much. Well, we are talking about organ donation today on the show, The Gift of Life. We've got Jeff and Deb. Deb Ness was a kidney donor, and she donated a kidney to Jeff Call. Was a recipient of Deb's kidney transplant. I'm going to talk with them some more about their experiences. And Dr. Ty Dunn, who is surgery director of the kidney and pancreas transplant programs at Frederick Hospital and the Medical College of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thank you so much for being with us today as we talk The Gift of Life, How Organ Donations Save Lives, with our two guests, Dr. Ty Dunn, surgical director of the Kidney and Pancreas Transplant Program at Frederick Hospital in the Medical College of Wisconsin, and Deb Ness, a kidney donor, and Jeff Call is the recipient of Deb's kidney transplant. Lots of callers online with many comments. Joanne Rhinelander is up now. Let's go there. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, I just wanted to pitch the idea of being a donor. I donated a kidney I'm 75, and donated a kidney about, I think, 10 years ago, non-directed. And then my wife, it worked out real well. And so my wife donated a kidney in 2021. And again, it worked out very well for her.
Well, Joe, thank you. Thank you for calling, and thank you for that, for what you and your wife did. Dr. Ty Dunn, maybe a comment?
Yeah, wow, that's an amazing thing. You guys are two special people donating altruistically. What he's talking about for the listeners is non-directed means that he wants to donate a kidney to help anyone who's in need, and he doesn't have anyone in mind. And that's where the transplant centers can work within their own center or with the National Kidney Registry to identify a recipient of his gift. And so sometimes that actually spins off a chain of transplants, because maybe the person he's going to donate to has a donor, but they're not compatible. And then that donor can donate, kind of like a chain of dominoes.
That was great, Joe. Thank you so much for what you've done and for calling. Lois in Chippewa Falls, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Lois.
Hi there. My husband and I signed papers about 15 years ago to donate our bodies. And when my husband passed away in January, we contacted UWM, and they said they didn't need him, that they had... he was too tall, and like they had too many bodies or something. So I was just kind of shocked.
Hmm. Does that happen often, Dr. Dunn?
Yeah, I'm not sure if she's talking about donating his body to science or for actual organ donation. So I don't know a lot about the former.
Yeah. Lois, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. We had another caller who whose son was born with one kidney and wondering how if that is very prevalent and how, you know, can he expect a long life?
Oh, we know that people can live just fine with one kidney. I think what we need to put in the context of is any other health conditions that might slowly cause some strain on that kidney. So sometimes people are born with other abnormalities that can kind of put more strain on that kidney. And sometimes people do end up needing a kidney transplant because of some of these congenital anomalies. But there's a lot of people that live just a perfectly normal life and a normal lifespan with one kidney that may be found incidentally. And we have a lot of data from, you know, the different world wars over time where people have lost a kidney traumatically and they've lived for a long time. We have a living donor registry in the University of Minnesota with over 40 years of follow-up on living donors. And there's a Dutch registry as well with about that much follow-up. So that's what we know about living with one kidney.
All right. So that's optimistic and pretty good news. I'm wondering, I want to go back to you, Jeff, and thinking about the folks who have called in who have donated or are planning to. How did Deb's decision to give you one of her kidneys affect your life?
Well, it was a huge decision on Deb's part. I mean, that takes not only a lot of time, but also a lot of, she was an amazing person, actually. And the whole experience for me has been, you know, life-saving. I was getting pretty close towards the end here of having to go on dialysis, which my goal was not to go on dialysis. And I was very close to having to go on, and then Deb stepped in there. And the thing about Deb is she had to fly back and forth from Colorado to Milwaukee. I think she did at least four times. And we had a little setback in January. We were supposed to have the transplant and about 20 hours. So she was in Milwaukee ready to go. And 20 hours before the surgeries happened, I had an incident where I think one of my cysts on my kidneys broke open. So I was urinating blood. So they had to cancel the entire transplant. And so we had to wait, I think it was almost 3 weeks to a month. So Deb had to come back again, and that's when we did it in February. But so she's been like a godsend to me. Yes.
Oh, wow. Deb, I'm wondering how. Yeah, I mean, you're obviously a pretty strong-willed person, but how did the family, you know, your husband and so forth? You know, I'm sure there was some initial what, but how was that like, the relationship there within your own family?
Well, it was a little bit challenging with my three adult children. My husband is great. He's super supportive of everything. He's concerned, you know, if I'm going to go under and have some major surgery, he's concerned about risk. With every surgery, there is some risk. You can't ever take that out. There is always some. So he was a little bit concerned about that. With my three adult children, they're all very supportive, but, you know, one of them voiced a little bit more concern about, are you sure you want to do this? Like, what if something happens? And we just kind of talked it through, and I would share with them my discussions with the different staff at Freightert. And the thing for them was they knew Jeff and Katie and Hannah and the family very well, too, because our families have been together for a long time. So we just kind of had to work through those points and times where they questioned it, but everybody became supportive and everybody was on board. I do want to mention a couple other things. And Juanita mentioned this about her daughter at 16 deciding that she wanted to donate, and then she passed away, you know, just a few years later and donated. My entire life, adult life, I always had everything marked on my driver's license to donate my organs, but I never took the step to say, should I be a living donor? Never kind of went there. And until Jeff became part of my life and became needing the kidney, it never really took my mind to that point. And after that happened, it's kind of like your awareness changes. And as you know, I live in Colorado, and I was driving one day, and I was behind a car. And this car was driving up into the front range, and on the back window of the car was, "Someone I know needs a kidney. Can you help? Please call," and a phone number. And it, you know, wow. It's again the awareness, because you're realizing that I'm going through this myself. And here's a random person who obviously has somebody very dear to them that needs a kidney. And there's just not enough kidneys, living donor kidneys out there available to help people. And it was just shocking that to what extent people will go to try to get help for somebody that they love. And, you know, similar to the caller that we had who said that he and his wife both donated, when I donated, which was just in February of this year, it happened to be on National Donor Day, Valentine's Day, and my 63rd birthday. So I was 63 when I donated, and I'm fine, and the recovery has been fine. And so if you've ever even thought about it, whether it's for somebody that you know, somebody that you don't know, because as Dr. Dunn talked about, you can help so many people, and it's really not a difficult thing to do, and you can recover so very well.
Someone else wondered if people with a targeted donor, do they kind of move to the front of the line, so to speak, Dr. Dunn?
I think it's important to understand that there's kind of two different things we're talking about here. So when people are on the national waiting list, you know, they would pretty much gain access to deceased donor kidneys. And most of the access is honestly driven by time waiting, which is, you know, there's, like I said, almost 90,000 people waiting and only 27,000 transplants done last year in the whole nation. There's over 1,200 people just in Wisconsin waiting for kidneys, but we only did 550 kidney transplants in the state of Wisconsin last year. So, you know, this is where that gap in unmet need is. Now, if a living donor becomes an option for you, then you don't have to worry about waiting on the waiting list. You just get the transplant. You know, it's and that frees up a kidney for another person that doesn't have a donor. So, you know, a living donor option is really the way to get the most healthy kidney possible and the way to not get sicker while you're waiting. So you can just avoid all of that time, either on dialysis or waiting for the kidney.
Jared in Green Bay, we'll give you a chance now. Jared, thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks, Larry. About 7 or 8 years ago, my wife donated a kidney to a coworker, but she has rheumatoid arthritis. And from what we understand, with her having the rheumatoid arthritis with only one kidney, she can't really be treated for rheumatoid arthritis. And it's really starting to affect her now, and she's only 47.
Oh, Jared, thanks for calling. Dr. Dunn, comment.
So some treatments for rheumatoid arthritis are simply targeting pain. So a very common pain reliever is in that category of like ibuprofen or Advil or Naprosyn. And so we do counsel people not to take a lot of that medication when they've donated a kidney, because that medication can harm kidney function. And so that would be one form of treatment that she's not a candidate for. But there are other forms of treatment for rheumatoid arthritis that maybe she can talk with her doctors about.
Yeah, other than the ones you mentioned. Jared, thank you very much for calling. Joan in Hobart, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I just wondered, I'm 82 and in really good health, except I have joint replacements, and I wondered if there is an age limit, a top age limit for certain kinds of.
Yeah. There an age limit for certain kinds of donations? Joan's wondering.
Yeah, they're a great question, Joan. So we don't really have any upper age limit for donation. It really depends upon how healthy the person is and how fit they would be for, you know, the operation and the recovery. And for recipients, likewise, we actually don't have an upper age limit here at Frater, but you can imagine that, you know, the older patients really need to be pretty fit to be safe to move forward with a transplant. But we have been transplanting people up into their 70s. Yeah.
So, Joan, I guess it's worth, what would Joan do to determine whether or not she'd be acceptable for this?
Like with any person that's interested in finding out more about donation or if it's an option for them, or just to learn about it to see if they want to move forward, they would contact the transplant center and speak with the living donor team. And the living donor team is dedicated to answering their questions and making sure that they're fully informed, and to help screen them to see if it's something that is reasonable to move forward with, or, you know, to undergo an evaluation for.
Do we know how many transplant teams exist in Wisconsin?
Well, there are four transplant centers. There's Children's of Wisconsin, which is a children's center exclusively. And then there's University of Wisconsin-Madison and Fratert, and another local program here in Milwaukee.
So four opportunities that I would expect. So if you were going to Fratert, you're interested in maybe because of location and so forth. You're on, how do you get to those folks? Online is probably the easiest.
Yep, online is great. We have a QR code online, and people can explore some frequently asked questions about donation, and there's a phone number to call and speak with a donor expert about all of their questions, and then they could do some initial questionnaire type screening, and then go from there.
Let's go, Joan, thanks again. Anna in Wausau, we'll go to you. Hi, Anna, thank you for calling.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to call in because I think this is a great program, and I am I'm a recipient of a living donor kidney transplant, and the start of my kidney disease was, I got it at the age of 4 as a child, and I'm now closer to 50, and a close friend of mine was not a match for me, but through the UW-Madison program, she was a match for someone else, and it became a chain of 6 donors and 6 recipients, and it's just the best kidney transplant I've ever had, and it's so special that we can do these chains and that there's people willing to do living donor donation.
Oh, Anna, thank you so much for calling. This interesting, this the chain, that reaction that kind of takes place under something like this, Dr. Dunn.
Yeah, it's a really special opportunity. You know, it's estimated about a third of the people on the national waiting list have had people step forward, but in the past they just were not the right blood type. And now we don't even really have to worry about that, because if they're medically suitable and they want to move forward, after their evaluation, they're approved for donation, we just figure out if we can donate directly. And if not, then we utilize the partnership that we have with the National Kidney Registry, which is a national program that ties together all of the transplant centers, all the major transplant centers in the nation who participate. And so at any one time, there's generally several hundred people in that pool. And that's where we can find the match for the intended recipient, and then we can schedule a living donor transplant. We simply move the kidneys to where the recipients are, so donors don't have to travel and be outside of their support network. It's really a great option.
Anna, thank you. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Deb.
I wanted to add, based on what Dr. Dunn said, that was an option for me, too. When I was here in Denver area, they said I could go to a transplant center here and have the surgery, and then they would transplant the kidney to Milwaukee, to Fratert, and Jeff would have his surgery. I made a personal decision for me that I wanted to be in Milwaukee at Fratert in an OR right down from Jeff, so that there was nothing that was going to be in the way. But if you're considering donation and you live somewhere else, I mean, it doesn't matter. There's so many transplant centers available that can accommodate you wherever you live.
Mm-hmm. That's a really important point. Glad you brought that up. We call that remote donation. And so that would be a remote directed donation where, you know, the donor's just in a different hospital, but the kidney is transported to the directed recipient. you know, I think that the other opportunities that the Paired Exchange Program, and obviously, you know, compatible people can choose to participate, because you can imagine they can donate their one kidney and transplant one patient, or they could basically be the reason that multiple people get transplanted, as was described by the previous caller. So participating through the National Kidney Registry can provide some donor protections and some lost wage reimbursement in case people are concerned that, you know, financially it would be a hardship for them to donate to be off work while they recover. But also a lot of people would say, you know, well, I would donate, but I'm worried that maybe my child or my loved one might need a kidney someday. So people can donate altruistically through the National Kidney Registry and name up to five individuals that if any one of those five ever needs a kidney, they will get a living kidney transplant out of the registry.
Oh.
So it's a pretty amazing thing that really helps provide a lot of peace of mind for people that are wanting to go forward, but just really not sure it's the right thing for their family. So,
yeah, that is really good news. I didn't know that. And it certainly would ease a lot of people's minds. I'm pretty sure of that. Taking a look at transplanting with our transplants today, organ donations, I should say, with our three guests. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking organ donation today with Dr. Ty Dunn, Surgical Director of the Kidney and Pancreas Transplant Programs at Frederick Hospital and the Medical College of Wisconsin, and with Deb Ness, a kidney donor, and Jeff Call, who is a recipient of Deb's kidney transplant. Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Let's take a question from Mike in Madison. Mike, thank you for calling.
Yeah, good afternoon. Some of my question has partially been answered just a few minutes ago, but your guests can go further in this. I'm calling because my friend, good friend, had wanted to donate a kidney to his father out of state. But by the time he got done doing all the tests, everything, this and that, he missed so much work that he lost his job. By the time he got a new job, got his finances back in order, and was ready again to donate, his father was no longer eligible for the kidney transplant. And so I'm wondering if there are any systems set up, and your guest had mentioned some financial aid, are there systems set up to help people financially to be able to do that? For, you know, my friend was is a very low income person, but he really wanted to donate to save his dad's life. But just financially, to drive out of state and do all the tests and do all that, it was just incredibly financially burdensome. Are there things set up for to help people who would like to donate?
So that is a very sad story. I think it's important to understand how important it is to be as efficient as possible with the evaluation. We worked really hard at our center to try to make it like a one-day thing. It's actually not the whole day, but then the problem is, you know, if there's concerns that require additional testing, then that needs to kind of figure out how to get done. So some patients do have to go through some additional testing, and that can require additional trips to the medical center and whatnot. To speak to your question about assistance, the National Living Donor Assistance Center is a national program that provides some travel help and some financial assistance for people that are in the process of undergoing their living donor workup. So there is that. And as I mentioned, the lost wage reimbursement from the National Kidney Registry. It's up to $6,000 for the time taken off work. Most people with desk jobs are off work for about 3 weeks, but we always encourage patients to take, you know, to plan to take at least 6 weeks off just to give themselves some grace during their recovery time. So I don't know. I mean, I've met Deb and worked with Deb, and I have to tell you, a lot of donors are very motivated, kind of type A people. So I say that with a smile on my face.
That is for sure.
Encourage our donors to slow down and smell the roses while they recover, because it is a process. It does take some time.
Yeah. Don in Madison has something that may relate to this. Don, hi.
Hi. Yeah.
I was a living donor about a dozen years ago. My sister-in-law had kidney disease. Her sister, my wife, was not medically suited as a donor. And so I donated into a chain of three donors and three recipients. It was the coolest thing ever. My kidney went to San Diego. The woman in San Diego, her daughter donated a kidney to a woman in Baltimore. A friend of the woman in Baltimore donated a kidney to my sister-in-law. It was just crazy. But the one thing that I haven't heard mentioned yet is at the time that this donation happened, I was an employee of the state of Wisconsin. And there was a state law then, and I don't believe it's been repealed, that says that any state employee that becomes a living donor is entitled to 30 days of leave with pay, no interruption in seniority, no interruption in insurance, none of that sort of thing. After my donation, I was ready to go back to work after about 3 weeks or so. And my boss said, no, take the full 30 days, just in case something goes south.
Don, that's interesting news. And Dr. Dunn, are you familiar with this?
There are benefits. I'm not sure exactly of the benefit in the state of Wisconsin. I'm sad to say that I need to learn about that a little more because I'm relatively new to Wisconsin. But there are benefits also at some employers where they have joined the donor circle, and the employers actually will guarantee keeping your job and making sure that there's appropriate reimbursement there for going forward with the donation. So there's a lot of money to put to try to make sure that people are having disincentives removed, so you don't have to worry about your job, you don't have to worry about the finances. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible for people that want to move forward.
And this is Deb. Me, when I did my donation, I was retired, so I had the ability to travel back and forth, and it was very easy for me to do it. However, the employer that I retired from, had I still been employed there, just like Dr. Dunn said, they had a program that was in place for anybody that chose to be a living donor to help protect them with their employment, to give them the time off from work with pay. And it was not a state, entity. It was a large technology company. And there's many large companies throughout the United States that do offer that. It might be a little bit more challenging for those smaller ones, but there are a lot of employers that participate in that.
Excellent. And Don, thank you again. Marlene in New Hope, we go to you next. Hi, Marlene.
Hi. I was wondering, I've signed up since I was a teen on my driver's license or whenever I could, and now I hear that that's not adequate, that they're, I again checked whatever box, but I also know people like with bone marrow, there's a certain registry. How do people make sure they are registered at the various places that need registration? If I could stay on the line to listen, I just walked in from my car and can't get you on my house radio.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a great, it's a great point. I think it's important to know that making your intentions known by getting on the registry when you do your license, and there's an organization called Donate Life Wisconsin that you can sign up through just to really declare your intentions. But I think more so even than that is to make sure that your family is aware, because in the absence of any kind of written declaration of your intention, and your family may be asked, had you thought about donation? And if they know how you feel, they're more likely to be able to honor your wishes.
Yeah, it's a very, very good point. And Marlene, thank you so much for calling. Joe in Chippewa Falls emailed, after a long time on dialysis and on the waiting list, his wife was playing bingo in Chippewa Falls one evening when she got a call about a donor. She yelled out bingo in the crowded room and left for Madison.
Good for her.
Yeah, that's probably the best bingo she ever ever got. Well, it sounds to me like obviously there's no question in your mind about this.
That's right. I would never change anything. I've said this to Jeff so many times and to his family. There's nothing I would ever change. This was meant to be. In my heart, I say, why didn't I ever think about this before? Why didn't I do it sooner? But if I would have done it sooner, I wouldn't have been there when Jeff needed me. And so it all worked out the way it was meant to be. And if there's anybody that's thinking about it, it really isn't that difficult. And there's just so many people that have the need that you could potentially help. So give it some thought and reach out to the team and have the discussion and see if it's something you want to take that journey down.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff, for you, you couldn't be happier.
That's an understatement, Larry. Yes. It was so nice that I got to meet Deb and all the things she's done for us. And I also wanted to say, my sister Kim donated a kidney to my aunt 30 years ago, and she's living great with one kidney. So it really is true that you can live with one kidney for a long time. And also, I just wanted to say thank you to Dr. Dunn for coming from Pennsylvania all the way to Wisconsin and being part of the Frater family there and helping Deb and I out. That was very nice of you.
I'm a Midwesterner, so this is where I belong.
Okay.
Oh my goodness me. Well, this has been really great. Just for more information, Dr. Dunn, maybe where do people go if they want to maybe become a donor?
I think it's important to partner with the transplant center that you wish to work with. And you can go to the website. I think that's the most direct way. So obviously, you know, we have a website. If you just Google, you know, Frater MCW kidney transplant, it's going to take you to there. And you can explore the resources that we have online. And you can respond online or via phone if you'd like to know more. And I'm sure all transplant centers have those same types of resources.
Yeah, I would definitely think that would be the case. Well, you know, I was just thinking about myself. You know, here I've got a cornea from someone who unfortunately passed away. And it was great for me. I was given a chance to, in this case, to write a letter anonymously. I didn't know the family, and the family didn't know that the letter was coming from me. But it was great to be able to write a letter of thanks to that family. And I also had some bone marrow, I think I might have mentioned, from a man because of a tumor I had in my finger. And I was able to get some bone marrow from another person, and, you know, sort of the same thing. It's a humbling experience, and certainly made me want to make sure that if I pass away or possibly be a living donor, that I'm here to be able to do that. And I want to thank you all very much for taking time to be with us today. Dr. Ty Dunn, Surgical Director of the Kidney and Pancreas Transplant Programs at Frederick Hospital and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Deb Ness, kidney donor. Jeff Call, recipient of Deb's kidney transplant. It was great to have you all with us, and thank you all very much for being with us today. Just a quick look tomorrow, we'll learn about how some research that's being done on transmitters to track fish in the Great Lakes. And I mention our great team, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnott, our producers, technical directors, Jeff Robbins and Lee Rayburn, executive director Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller.